You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon Wrassalon.
That is true.
Today we're going to be talking about the fourth serial of the 16th season of Doctor Who, The Androids of Terra, which consists of four episodes that aired from November 25th, 1978 to December 16th, 1978.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Bisexual Brigadier for purchasing the whole Key to Time DVD set for us.
Hey, thanks, Bisexual Brigadier.
You can follow her on Tumblr at bisexualbrigadier.tumblr.com. And returning to the podcast today for the third time, I believe, it's Mike Gordon, everybody.
Howdy.
Woo!
Is there a third-timer's jacket that I'm supposed to be getting or wearing?
It's just a hat. But not even like a hat. It's the, you know, those kind you wear at casinos that doesn't have a top? What are they called?
Casino hats.
Visor?
I guess.
Yeah, visor.
So it's one of those, and it's just in Sharpie, it's written third timer.
It's actually just a paper hat that I'm folding right now, furiously.
I'll just stick with my fez, thanks.
Ooh, nice. Maybe we'll just get you a pin for the fez.
Awesome. I'm glad to be here. Thanks again for the invite. I always like hanging out with you guys and talking some classic Who, and this one is a goodie.
Well, yeah, we love having you on, too, and I hope we can maybe create yet another Big Finish spinoff.
I think there's some possibilities with this one, so...
We'll find out. So, what you been up to?
Well, you know, I'm just still spinning yarns over at the Earth Station 1 main show, I guess we like to call it, weekly. And then for my comic, I've got a Kickstarter about to happen, so I'm very excited about that.
I will throw some money at that.
I appreciate that. It's my first one, my first crowdfunding effort, so... Very excited to see if there's a lot of support for Tiki Zombie. We've had a lot of support from readers and fans through the years, but now I feel like this will just give them a chance to pre-order the book because we're steadily working on it, but this will just make things happen a lot faster, I hope.
Well, I hope you get successfully funded and all that stuff.
Thank you.
Are we ready to talk about Doctor Who?
Let's do it.
Let's dive into The Androids of Terra, which I gotta say, first off, I thought was going to be some sort of play on words a bit, like terror, androids of terror, but...
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, I guess some of the androids could be a little scary at points, but I wouldn't say they were terror. But the first episode, which I have called Doctor's Day Off, reference to Baby's Day Off. Maybe.
I will call it Weakened King's Side.
So we start off with one of my favorite recurring gags. Doctor's playing chess with K-9.
And losing badly.
Yes, but like refusing to acknowledge that he's losing badly. I gotta say he's at least somewhat better in this serial because in ones before he's like, oh no, I have accidentally tipped over the entire board. Which is rude. This time he's just like, oh, I'm getting distracted by the plot of the episode. We'll finish this later. Well, Romana thinks, like, we don't have time for this nonsense. We gotta find the...
We kind of have, like, a mission, and you're stopping just to play games. Feels irresponsible.
They find out where the next piece is, and they land on the planet, which is Terra. She goes to choose a new outfit, while the doctor...
She starts in a really good outfit.
Yes, that big white one.
She's got like a Princess Leia gown going on.
Isn't that what she wore in the first episode? I don't remember. She wears a lot of outfits and they're all great.
It's true. It's hard to keep up with them.
It's understandable that she changes though because it's not very practical.
She doesn't always change into something more practical. But...
Well, what she changes into is only slightly more practical than what she was wearing.
It is amazing though. And it happens to be, the colors of it happen to be the colors that were our wedding colors. Purple and teal?
Yeah.
And so Joe and I loved it. She could have fit right in with our wedding party.
She should have been at our wedding. It was fun. Also, from what I read on Wikipedia and the like, Mary Tam, the actress, made this dress herself? Because the first dress they made, she didn't like. I think it was, like, scratchy. And so she, like, made her own version of it.
The only thing that slightly bothers me is that, like, she puts on this outfit and it's like, this is what everybody's wearing on this planet. And then we go to that planet and no one's wearing anything slightly similar to what she has on.
I don't think the TARDIS and K-9 are particularly fashion savvy.
Maybe they were just off by like a couple decades.
It happens.
It's what everybody's gonna be wearing in like 20, 30 years.
Oh yeah, she's definitely fashion forward, right?
Yeah, yeah, she's starting the trends.
Yeah, she's the one who like
she's
starts
oh,
it.
I see. Yeah. Like after everyone was like, that is a good outfit.
Yeah, she directly influenced it.
That's a paradox.
Probably. But it's Doctor Who.
Fashion paradox.
But while she's getting her outfit, the Doctor is getting a fishing pole. Because he's like, I ain't doing this one. I am out this episode. You go do it. I'm going to go fishing. I deserve a break. Every so often I deserve a... Well, I think he says a 50-year break. But he's only going to take a couple hours to go fishing.
On the one hand, it's slightly disarming to see the Doctor not interested in following up with the mission. But on the other hand, he seems perfectly confident in Romana's ability to handle this. That's actually a positive, because you don't get to see that very much from the Doctor relationships with companions, or as he likes to call them, assistants.
Plus, I feel like this happened a lot during the second Doctor era. There would always be like, the Doctor's like, all right, gonna have a holiday. We're gonna go to the beach and have some fun. And then, you know, stuff happens.
Unfortunately, a plot happens.
Yeah.
The TARDIS has other ideas.
So this seems to be in the tradition of that as well. Just like, all right, I'm gonna relax for a little. Oh, no. Oh, plot.
The great thing is that the Doctor's like, yeah, I'm not here. If you want to do it, you go for it. Romana's like, all right, I'll be back in an hour. I will go do it, and I will take care of it, and I'll do it faster than we've ever done it before.
Yeah, just two episodes, not four. And I'm going to land the TARDIS smoothly, even though I still will leave the parking brake on.
Technically, she kind of does. She pretty much walks up, finds the key.
Yeah, she finds this statue. There's like a dragon head on it. She touches it, turns into the key. She takes it back to the TARDIS and the serial's over. Thanks for listening.
Maybe one day we'll get through an episode where we won't make that joke. But that day's not today.
But she does find it, like, super easily. And then she gets attacked by a baby Bigfoot?
I don't know what that is.
It doesn't seem to be important in any way.
It never comes back. And I'm a little sad. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. This thing looks goofy and fun. But no, this is the only scene with it. The rest of it is medieval stuff, but with robots and laser swords. No more crazy creatures.
No more baby Bigfoots.
But she is saved by this guy who looks like a medieval knight.
A knight.
With a... when I say laser sword, I don't mean like a lightsaber. It's like a sword that like shoots sparks. And he is Count Grendel of Gracht. Is that how you pronounce it?
Sure.
But he seems to recognize her and says that the beast is his, the Bigfoot. It's his
property.
Keeps
him on the grounds for hunting.
Yeah, that's not exactly clear. Does he help with hunting? Was he hunting it? I'm not really sure.
I'm pretty sure he was hunting it.
Yeah, like... I feel like he has it in a cage and then he lets it loose and then he chases it down. Because that seems like the kind of thing a rich person would do.
That's some rich person medieval nonsense.
Yeah. He takes the key piece from her. He's like, I have to register this because we don't know what it is. And then he
scoops her up.
Yeah, because like, she hurt her ankle. And he's like, well, we got to take care of that. And carries her to his horse, which Romana seems stumped by.
Does not know what a horse is.
That seems silly.
I read somewhere someone was like, was it supposed to be like a robot horse? And they just couldn't afford it, so they just had a real horse? Because if it was a robot horse, her like confusion would probably be a little more understandable. And also would make sense with, you know, this is like medieval stuff, but like more technologically advanced.
Gallifrey just doesn't have horses.
I guess. They know about horses.
Do they?
There's horses in the Matrix.
Oh, shoot, you're right.
But maybe she just missed out on the horse's culture.
Yeah, sometimes you get to be, like, really old and you just miss out on certain obvious aspects of, like, being an alive human being. And for Romana, that thing is just horses. The concept of horses.
For a long time, I didn't know narwhals were real, so... I thought they were just the unicorn of the sea. Yeah.
My favorite part of this is, though, while we're still kind of astounded that Romana's never seen a horse before, she asks the knight, the count, how does it go? What makes it work? As if it's a machine. And he's like, I don't know. Like, I have no idea.
I just ride it. And honestly, if you ask me the same thing about my car, I'd be like, I don't know, gas, I guess. And then I don't even know what the gas does. It burns, I guess. It disappears and makes the car go.
I can tell you what, it involves combustion. That's as far as I got.
Just seems like an odd question when she says, how does it go? What makes it work? Like, it's a living thing.
Same thing that makes you go.
Grass and sea. What do horses eat?
Just a little bit of love.
A salt lick. A little bit of love?
Yeah.
Aw. And then we see another laser sword guy whose name is Farah, who sets the doctor's hat on fire as he's taking a nap while fishing.
This seems like an amazingly dangerous stunt for Tom to participate in.
Right?
Right. Yeah, it's like on his face.
He really did put his hat on fire.
And he's so calm during it, too. And he's just like, hey, excuse me, my hat's on fire. But they say that he is on Prince Reynard's land, his hunting estate. So this is not the same guy as Grindel. There's two different sections here of hunting properties, I guess. But he just casually takes the sword from Farah and is, like, looking at it, like, oh, this is neat. And then just hands it right back. I like how he just does not care that he's in danger at any point. But because he's so interested, he's looking at the sword and interested in it and, like, says some, like, you know, technobabble about it. The other guy who is with Farah, his name is Zadok, I was like, oh, hey, you know about electronics and stuff? And the doctor's like, well, yeah. And he's like, well, we got this android that needs fixing. And he's like, what would you suggest? And he's like, well, you could take him to the android dealer, which is a joke that is funny now for a different reason.
It's funnier today on account of I have an android phone.
Right.
And I imagine that the joke was made is that in real life, the doctor is like, just take it to T-Mobile.
Of course.
But meanwhile, Grindel takes Romana to his... escape-proof castle is what he says very specifically, which that's not suspicious.
It's a little suspicious.
And we get to see a character that when he popped up, I immediately went, comic relief! Till, the like hunchback servant of Grindel.
He doesn't do much there either.
No.
To be honest.
Yeah, he has one important-ish scene later, but he doesn't really do as much as I expected him to do. He does jump around a lot in the background, so that's fun to watch. It's very jester-ish. But Romana is brought to this creepy lab and laid onto a table, and we meet Lamia, who...
has some sweet hair.
Some sweet, sweet curly cues. I love that hairstyle. Yeah,
she's the only one that has... designs on her face. I think that's a personal choice.
Is it designs or is it hair?
It's her curls.
Yeah, like they're all over it too. They're like on the side of her face and on her neck.
She's also very fashion forward.
That's what we should have also another subtitle for this episode: Registering the Stone.
Ooh, nice. I like that. I've never seen Romancing the Stone. Is it good?
I don't know.
I enjoyed it, but I haven't seen it in a couple decades.
But they are immediately pretty much like, oh wow, she looks like really real. Let's disassemble her for parts.
Let's cut her head off.
And Romana's like, wait, what? They've taken the doctor to the, I guess, to the prince's house? I don't know. Wherever he's at. Where the android is. And Farah continues to be wanting to destroy the doctor's clothes because they're not fashionable enough. He like sets fire to the doctor's scarf.
He literally like cuts the scarf. That's very rare. You don't see injuries to the scarf very often.
And honestly, that's the first time the doctor seems legitimately upset. I was like, the hat, he's like, hey, stop that. But this is, he's like, hey, if you do that again, there's gonna be problems.
He puts his life before the scarf. He says, if you don't stop burning my scarf, you're going to have to kill me.
I don't think he's that way about his companions.
I don't think so. Ouch. Either. He's certainly not that way about K-9.
In my notes, I have that Farah is a brash young David, which is a reference to some of our past episodes. There's always, like, a character who we call the brash young David, who is always, like, wanting to...
What serial was that from that he got named David?
I want to say it was either the Aztecs or... It was somewhere around there. There's basically always this one character who wants to solve things by fighting them or being violent. And this is that character.
This is a brash young David.
I honestly thought they were setting something up with him. Well, spoilers, later there's a bit where he brings in some drinks that are poisoned. And, like, he keeps saying things like, you know, he's wanting to fight all the time. And there's a bit where he says that he admires Grendel, even though he's a bad guy. He's like, you gotta admire him. And I'm like, he's gonna turn out to be, like, bad, right? But he never does.
He's just a brash young David.
So they say that the doctor will be rewarded for mending the android. They'll give him 100 gold pieces. Or he's like, well, I don't care about money. Make it 500. Which
he gets him down to because they first offer him 1,000.
Oh, is that what they did?
No, they offer him 1,000. He says, you think you can buy me for money? Pah, 500.
That's some terrible businessmanship. Is that a word?
I'm pretty sure he gets the 500 and he just leaves it on the table later.
Yeah, the guy puts it on his scarf. His injured scarf.
Back at the lab, they are drawing a line on Romana's throat, which is disturbing. So they're going to cut it off. But Lamia sees her swollen ankle and is like, oh no, this isn't an android. Androids' ankles can't swell. That's impossible.
How did you not know this when you tried to lift her?
He doesn't know how things work.
Because certainly an android would be much heavier.
That's true. Maybe they make their androids out of lightweight material.
I don't know. They are pretty creepy looking, especially without the faces.
Reminds me a lot of that one where Sarah Jane's face falls off. This gives Grendel, he's like, all right, if she's real, then I have better plans for her. And then they inject her with some stuff and she passes out. So the doctor is working on the android. And I think we now meet the prince, I believe, who is like, don't you wish that we knew how to do these peasants' jobs? Because apparently android work is a peasant's job. And his assistant guy, Zadok, says, if we were meant to be peasants, we would have been born peasants. Which is the richest line I've ever heard.
These are the good guys, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. They stay the good guys the whole time, and I don't think they ever get called out for that terrible, terrible line. But the doctor is working on the android, and he's going to make it look like the prince. And it's all part of this plan, because the prince is about to be crowned, but they want to make sure he doesn't get assassinated before being crowned king. The android's going to be a distraction while he goes and sits on the throne. Because it's a very time-sensitive thing, by the way. If you're not there, oh well, someone else has got to be king. They threaten the doctor, too. Like, you will stick with the android. He's like, I don't want to do that. And then they pull out a sword and he's like, or you know what? I could do that.
Again, these are the good guys.
But he finishes making the android, which they do a really decent split screen here where, like, the android says goodnight to the real prince. And, you know, it's the same actor. And then he walks through a door and then, like, the real prince, like, walks past where the android was. I was very impressed by that. I love split screen. I use it all the time, so... But also, the doctor keeps calling the android George, so I'm going to refer to him as George to distinguish him from the prince.
King George. Well, that's next.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's next episode. But yeah, then that's when they all drink a toast. Everyone gets poisoned, including the doctor, and they all fall down, and the doctor opens the door as he's falling down, revealing Grendel. Dun, dun, dun.
Poisoned everybody.
Poisoned everyone.
Not enough to kill him, though.
No.
Which probably would have been a lot more convenient, like, on his part.
And he kidnaps one person and leaves everybody else.
Yeah, he doesn't need anybody else. He just wants to stop the prince from showing up. That nobody else is necessary. You certainly don't want that sword-wielding guy.
But again, what's to stop him from killing everybody?
That is a good question. I mean, he could have saved himself a lot of trouble.
A lot of his plans are a lot more complicated than they need to be, and really that's, like, his biggest flaw.
Yeah, he's got, like, supervillain.
I mean, he might be a master swordsman, and there's a certain amount of charm to him, but I think it's pretty plain throughout this whole story, he's not the brightest bulb.
He is very fun to watch, though. He is a very good hammy villain.
Yeah, I particularly like him in the performance. I think it's one of the better ones. He's a great foil for the Doctor, certainly.
And that is the end of episode 1. We are now into episode 2, which I have titled The Prisoner of Terra.
Yeah, I can't fault that. That's awesome.
It's a reference to The Prisoner of Zinda, which this is largely based upon.
This is a wonderful mashup of stories like Prisoner of Zinda or what's the one with the two princes?
The Man in the Iron Mask?
That one, or those old-time adventure stories, but then with a mix of sort of Westworld and that sort of element to it, particularly the first original movie, Westworld. I mean, later on, you know, the whole Westworld thing, I've never really thought about it that way because, well, this is the first time I think I've seen it since I watched the HBO show. But still, I like those elements too. I'm a big fan of like Blade Runner and all that sort of stuff. So this is a nice mashup within Doctor Who of those two elements, which I really appreciate.
You know, it's a classic sort of swashbuckling type story, but with these like sci-fi elements on top of it.
I'm really keen on when Doctor Who does that. It doesn't do it enough in the modern era, I don't think.
I can only think of like maybe two or three times off the top of my head. The Robin Hood one or the one with the Vikings.
Yeah, that was the Robin Hood one was the one that immediately came to mind. I think that's the most obvious. But I think there's a couple of others, but they're less so.
So you just got to go to Classic Who for this good stuff. So the prince has been kidnapped, so they don't know what to do. So the doctor's like, why don't we just crown the android instead? And they're like, yeah, okay. And so the doctor calls for K-9.
I don't know why they never let K-9 just come with them. To begin with.
Right.
And like the last three serials, there's been a scene where the doctor is like, oh yeah, K-9 exists. I mean, I guess it's to cut down on the amount of using him.
Right.
Because he's probably an unwieldy prop, but...
But yeah, like they would save so much time if they just like bring K-9 with them to begin with. Instead of just like, oh wait.
Well, oh, keep in mind, at least story-wise, the doctor was... not planning to do any of this.
That's true. That is a good point.
I think the last thing he wanted while relaxing and fishing was K-9 next to him. It's reminding true. Him once again how bad at chess he is.
Or that he goes with him and like K-9 just catches more fish than he does. Somehow.
By lasering the lake, really.
But K-9 shows up. Farah draws his sword because he's a brash young David. And K-9 shoots him. Well, shoots the sword out of his hand.
Well, because the doctor's like, don't do that, don't do that. Because he knows K-9 will not put up with it.
Because K-9's kind of a badass. Like, I always assumed he was going to be the cutesy, you know, kid-friendly sidekick. But K-9 kicks some ass.
I think K-9's killed more people on this show than anyone else.
The K stands for killer.
Well, the doctor's like, where's Romana? And K-9's like, nah.
Insufficient data.
They realize that she went off in this one direction, which is the Grendel's property, and that possibly she has been taken by Grendel. So I'm not entirely sure why Grendel injected Romana with this stuff that makes her pass out, because the next thing he does is he just moves her to he wakes her up and is like, hey, let's go for a trip. I'm not sure why he didn't take her to the cell immediately. But he takes her down to, like, the basement, you know, the dungeons, and shows her a cell that contains Princess Strella, who, coincidentally, looks exactly like Romana. This is, like, what, the third time this has happened in Doctor Who?
Yeah.
You did her disservice. It's Princess Strella, First Lady of Terra, descendant of the royal house, mistress of the domains of Thorwald, Mortgard, and Freya.
Wow. Do you have that memorized, or are you reading it?
I am reading that.
I was about to be very impressed.
I am not that impressive, but she is. Look at all those titles.
It's a lot.
And she is the first lady of Terra. I don't know what that means. It seems to imply something that I don't think it actually means in this episode.
The first lady of fashion.
Well, that would make sense. Because she is probably the one she has, by the end of this, knows exactly how that outfit would look on her.
That is a really good point.
And she's very good at, like, stitching things. Because that's what she's doing. She's, like, weaving something, right? That's how she keeps busy.
She also, Grendel points out, is Terra's most eligible spinster.
She's going to take Romana's dress and make it popular.
She's literally sitting there sewing a tapestry.
It's all coming together. It all makes sense. let's see, how many times has this plot happened, though? Because we've had this with the first Doctor. There was a guy that just coincidentally looked exactly like Hartnell. St. Bartholomew's Eve?
Could be. I don't think we've covered that one, so I haven't seen that one.
It's a missing one. The Doctor gets to play a bad guy.
There's a second Doctor serial.
The Enemy of the World.
Yes, I have seen that one.
I don't think there was a third Doctor one, or a fourth.
Not that I can remember one.
There isn't one where someone looks like Tom Baker.
No, but Mary Tam gets her work. I mean, she earns her paycheck big time in this story. She plays four characters.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that first episode that we just reviewed, that's the only time she's only one. The rest of the time she's playing multiple people in this, or things in this story.
This one is the height of it, I guess. This is three. Well, there's three in the next one too, I guess. I don't think there's ever one episode that has all four.
Well, technically the next one, because of the very beginning of the next one.
Oh, right, the recap. Yep. The recap. All right, well, the next one's four. Okay, cool. That's got to be a Doctor Who record.
I don't know if Princess Strella shows up in the third episode, though. You know, they can only split the screen so many times.
And they do it fairly well for the most part, except for one scene, which we will get to. But basically, Grendel says, like, his plan was that he was going to marry Strella and then kill her. But maybe he'll marry Romana instead. Is that is...
That's basically the plan.
He's keeping his options open.
That's not the only thing he's doing, because he's also trying to keep the prince from becoming king. So he's got really two things going. I don't know why he needs to do both, but it's kind of nice. I guess he has a backup.
He said he likes to hold all the cards.
And look, I mean, Princess Strella is pretty attractive, so I get it.
You understand why you would hold someone hostage to marry them?
Quite frankly, Mary Tam Romana is up there with some of my favorite companions. She's not like at the top, but she's fairly good. She had such a short run that it's a shame. But one thing that forgive me, but her beauty is like really distracting at times. She's almost like too beautiful for some of the scenes and things that they have her doing, if that makes sense. Like, it's just
really.
it's like wow,
you've got a crush, is that what you're telling me?
Maybe just a little bit. Maybe that's the reason that this is one of my favorite stories too,
because four Romanas,
four Mary Tams.
So but she is put into the cell with the prince. She is going to be held prisoner with him and be his nurse.
Yeah, because that makes sense. Again, he's not very bright.
I'm just going to put you in here so you guys can conspire together.
It seems to be weird, too, because I'm not really sure what's wrong with him. Because he had the same poison as everybody else. Everybody else is fine. He seems to have some injury to his side. I don't know, they said something about he's running a fever, he's ill. As a matter of fact, Roman is the one that says that. And so it's not really sure exactly what put him in this state.
That's a good question. I don't know. And if anybody was going to be sicker, it would be the Doctor, because he actually had more to drink than anybody else.
Right, even though he has two hearts and a different immune system.
But I don't know. I imagine maybe there was some torture involved or something.
Sure, we'll go with that.
So the Doctor sends K-9 to look for Romana while he heads out with King George to start that plan in motion. And they're making their way there, and we have a scene where Farah is basically an android racist. He's just like, you know, they kind of creep me out. That's not weird, right? And the Doctor's like, you know, I've heard some androids say the same thing about humans, which he says twice in this serial at different points.
Oh, yeah. He finds a lot of androidism.
You know, that is a problem that exists throughout all of Doctor Who, is people like treating robots like crap. It even happens in Kerblam.
Because certainly everybody should treat their androids and robots as well as the Doctor treats K-9, right?
Fair enough. It's a little bit hypocritical. A little bit. And then we have a scene where Lamia futzes with the key piece for a very long time. Were they, like, running short on time? Just keeps going. And I think she does ding up the prop a little bit.
She does. And she's supposed to be showing how, like, she's got a diamond drill bit on there and she can't even do anything to it. And at some point she just makes this big old scratch across the front of it, and all of a sudden it stops. Like, that shot stops and it moves to a different angle.
K-9 gets to the castle and scans and sees that Romana is indeed in there. So he's got his intel. So then Romana is taking care of the prince, and some guards come and take Romana away. I don't remember what for yet, but I'm assuming it's in my notes.
When I was watching this just this past weekend, I was surprised too. I'm like, oh, why are they taking her away? It seems like the Count, sorry, Grendel, doesn't need her yet, but it's not the Count that is requesting her.
Oh, right. And also it's like sort of setting up this cliffhanger ending, I guess. But the Doctor and his company make their way through a secret tunnel.
Which is guarded.
Yeah, because they have to take out a guard in front of it. But they still get followed by guards anyway once they get in there. Oh, also, we're now starting the sort of coronation. And there is this really cool clock on the wall. I really like this clock. That's counting down to, like, because the prince has to be there at a specific time to be crowned. But it looks very, like, astrological. And I want that hanging up in our house somewhere.
Yeah, does it... I mean, could it possibly be used as a real clock? Is it 12?
It might be more than 12. Tony went, oh no, it's half past a squiggle at one point. And then when there's a shot where Grendel just walks into the throne room and just, like, takes a test sit on the throne and giggles.
That's really bad form. The minute he got in the chair, I'm like, yep, see, you ruined it. Because there's what do they call them? Like you don't touch the thing that you're going for. Like in hockey, the Stanley Cup. Like, if you never won the Stanley Cup, don't touch it. Or if you ever want to win it, don't touch it, because that'll ruin that. It's like a curse or something. And that's I've heard that about other things, like Oscars and other awards and stuff like that. Like, if you really want it to earn, you have to earn it. You can't just fiddle with it beforehand.
That seems like some people take that too far. That also seems like no premarital sex.
If you really want to touch it, you've got to earn it.
Jesus. That's a jump I didn't expect.
Joe will do that to you.
I'm always one step ahead.
Not even ahead, just someplace weird.
I'm one step a weird.
Then we got to go find you. Be like, how'd you get over there?
It's distracted. So, I also like this scene where he's just sort of, like, discussing, like, you know, like, everything's going good, the prince isn't here, and, you know, and he's like, you know what, I'm gonna reject the crown once. I'm not gonna reject it twice, but I don't want to seem too eager. And he's, like, just trying to figure out the perfect way. But to be honest, the guy that, you know, will do the crowning and all that stuff seems fairly easy to convince.
He does also have a nice hat.
The hats in this are problematic, particularly the soldier and minister hats. They're too tall. I keep noticing that the actors had to make sure that they always bowed when they were going underneath a tree or in a doorway or a tunnel. I get the feeling that it was like, oh yeah, that wasn't the first take.
There is a scene where, like, when they're running up to, like, take out that guard and Zadok has that pointy spear-looking hat, and he definitely does hit a tree.
If his sword doesn't work, he could just stab him with his helmet.
Oh, that'd be cool. So now they are practical. Well, speaking of walking into things, they're in that tunnel, and George just walks into a rock overhang, like, three times in a row, just keeps bump, 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 like some bad computer programming.
Really good job of being just like having a completely deadpan face,
just being completely emotionless and
robotic.
Yeah, but they are being shot at by the guards. They gotta open this door, and the lever's stuck. Oh no, it's very tense. And then the time is up. It is time for the coronation, and they're like, well, he's not here, what are we gonna do? And then they open the door, but guess what? He's on the throne. George is on the throne. And then they're like, oh, cool. Well, let's get this going. Everybody kneel. And Grendel's, like, just standing there while everybody else kneels. But he does eventually kneel. And then he's crowned. And then he has to give a speech. And he sort of gives a speech.
He's very good at that, too. Where the Doctor says he turned off his speech centers to conserve energy. And they're like, well, he's going to have to give a speech. He's like, I'll turn him back on for the speech. But there's this one thing he does where, like, he makes that, like, powering down in the middle of a word sound.
Yeah.
And he does it really well.
I forget what he says, but yeah, it's like, Hi, I am the king.
Yeah.
Like that.
I think just before this, I meant to point out that I thought it was funny how even though Grendel was pondering rejecting the first suggestion that he be offered the crown, he didn't go with that. As soon as the archbishop guy,
sure.
The guy with the cool hat, offered it to him, you know, he was like, oh yeah, I'll take that. That's a great idea.
You're very smart. I like you. That is true. He's too eager. I mean, that's what happened. That's this character in a nutshell. Too eager.
And the look on his face when they go into the throne room is pretty awesome. He's just like, what?
Gobsmacked.
So gobsmacked and like upset that he forgets he doesn't kneel, even though he probably should to save face.
Yeah, I don't know if he doesn't kneel because he's too astounded or upset. Or if he doesn't kneel because he knows that that's not really the prince, but he can't say anything.
Right.
Because they'd be like, how do you know it's not the prince? Well, I've got one in my basement.
It's a sticky situation to be in. So, but now it is time for, I guess, the royalty to come forward and give their vows of, you know, allegiance to the king. And
this is a fun scene.
The princess shows up and she gives her vows. The doctor grabs this, like, staff thing from the prince and goes, no! And just smacks her on the head.
Not the princess. Princess Estrella, descendant of the royal kings of Terra, mistress of the domains of Thorwald, Mortgart, and Freya. And an eligible spinster.
To be fair, that's not even who it is.
It's a robot.
She uses a word that I have never heard before, and it stuns me every time she says it. When she says, I hereby recognize his Suzanti over me. And I'm like, what is that?
What is it?
I don't know. I never have looked it up.
And we'll never, ever know. We're not going to.
I keep thinking she's mispronouncing sovereignty.
That's what I thought, too.
And I thought, well, that's how he knows that it's a robot.
I'm going to Google it.
But when I was looking at other things, it said that she actually uses the word Suzanti, and I'm like, I don't know what that means. It's a code word that only androids use, and that's how the doctor knew.
Suzantry. Yeah, all right. Let's Google that word. We're going to be educational today, kids.
The word of today is Suzanti.
Suzantry, a situation in which a region or people is a tributary to a more powerful entity, which allows the tributary some limited domestic autonomy. That sounds right.
Sure. It's a real word. It's a word that I've never heard used ever since. Like, that's the only time I've ever heard that word.
The more you know. But I was shocked when this happened, because I kind of thought, oh, he has somehow tricked Romana into doing this. I don't know why.
What we're led to believe. That's what's really cool about this is because we see the guards grab her, and this is the next time we see her. So because we don't know that it's not been the count that retrieved Romana from the cell yet. So I thought that actually this is pretty cool script writing because we're led to believe that that's her.
Yeah, and then the doctor just hits her.
Attacks her.
And I was like, oh, shit. Because I thought the doctor thought it was an android, but it was actually Romana, and it was going to be a problem. Okay, so also, last serial, the doctor refused to film a scene where he pushed Romana off of a cliff because he didn't want kids seeing that. Totally okay with him hitting her in the face with a stick.
It wasn't really her. The robot.
Well, it wasn't really the doctor in the last one either. It was Vivian Faye. A little inconsistent there, Tom Baker. But that's the end of episode 2. We are now into episode 3, which I have called Robomana.
And I have subtitled Lamia's Lament.
Aw. There needs to be a musical number. Every Doctor Who serial could be improved with a musical number.
This one in particular, probably. You know what? If a off-Broadway crew wanted to make this into a musical, I would be there opening night.
But yes, it turns out that was not Romana. It was not Princess Strella, the Gamble Putty, Vasven Crunch, Blinden Schlitter. I don't remember her title. It was an android. It was a robot Strella, a robo Strella. Then Grendel's like, oh, there may be more androids. We should postpone this coronation.
Who knows who could be an android?
I could be an android. You could be an android.
The prince, The prince could be an android. The prince is an android.
Yeah, this is where it like becomes like Westworld.
And then they're like, all right, fine, we'll just postpone until... And plus, they're like, the doctor's like, also, the prince needs to rest. He's very tired because he's basically out of juice. So they postpone it. Lamia asks Romana about the key piece. And Romana has to be like, I don't know what that is.
It's just something neat I found in the dirt. Can I have it back?
And Lamia's like, no. And then Grendel comes in like, oh, my whole plans were ruined. But then he sort of figures out that Romana knows the doctor. And he's like, oh, cool, I can use that. New plan.
He blasts Lamia because the machine wasn't perfect. And then he asks her immediately to build another one in less time.
And also wants it to be more based on Romana than Strella.
Because he does say our guest can help or something like that. Because
I think he wants it to be more like Romana. I mean, even though they're basically identical visually, I guess. Because they do like study her. And Lamia's like, she ain't Terran. She's something else. And he's like, it doesn't matter. Make a duplicate anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is it here or is it later? Yes, it's just a scene later where she finds out that due to the alpha waves, that Romana is not Terran, and that doesn't seem to bother anybody. I'm like, this should be a big event for you guys. I think she says, when she's trapped, or first kidnapped, I think she says, I'm not even Terran.
Yeah, she definitely says, I'm not from here.
So it shouldn't be that much of a surprise to them, but yet, they don't even really... Lamia seems pretty impressed, like, whoa, she's not even, like, from this planet. And he's just like, I don't care. I've got the plans.
Just do the thing. She's like, okay.
Because I love him. Which is like, man, do better. Have better taste. Yeah. Come man. On.
You've got an awesome haircut. You can get way better dudes.
Well, Romana tries to use that argument on her later as well.
With very little effect, sadly. And then there's so then we got our second sort of android racism scene. The doctor has, like, programmed and charged up George a little bit, and they're testing him. Like, he's like, he's got to be at, like, a dinner party or something. And, like, ask him some questions, and then he does, and then, like, he rattles off some, like, impressive things. And then Zadok's like, hey, one thing, you know, the prince is pretty smart, but this robot... too smart? And the doctor's like, well, yeah, because I programmed him. But he's like, well, maybe they'll, you know, think that it's an android because he's too smart.
Well, and that's when Zadok says, we don't want him too intelligent because you can't trust androids, you know.
Yeah. And then the doctor's like,
you racist.
And then the hunchback guy, Till, comes in to talk to the doctor.
You guys remember Till.
Yeah.
We said he didn't do much. This is his second scene.
He took the last episode off.
So he's like, I gotta talk to the doctor alone. So they go off. And at this point, Farrah continues to be a brash young David. And is like, I'm just gonna go stab him with a sword. And starts to pull his sword out. And K-9's like, uh-uh-uh. And he's like, oh. Puts his sword back. He goes, good dog.
Good dog.
But basically, Till tells the doctor that he needs to meet up with Lamia at this gazebo at midnight, which everybody's pretty sure is a trap, but like the doctor's like, how do you know unless you walk into it? It's a very Farscape thing.
It is a bit, isn't it?
Midnight on this planet must be noon.
Well, to be fair, the doctor goes there...
Early.
Everybody shows up there early.
All the fighting takes place and everything, it's still afternoon. Like, at no point in this episode, until they go to the castle, is it dark.
That's true. We don't know how long the hours are on this planet either. Is midnight the asterisk on the clock?
But if it's called midnight, that seems to imply that it happens at night. But it doesn't here.
And then we see that Grendel is indeed is setting up a trap. And he has made a robomana.
This is the third character? Or the fourth?
This is the fourth.
Fourth.
This is Assassin Romana.
There's been Romana, Strella, blah, 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 blah. then there's the Strella robot that got smashed by the doctor.
And this is the Romana robot.
That's faux Strella, blah, 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 blah.
And this is Robomana.
Got it.
Grendel has programmed, well, Lamia has programmed Robomana to explode the doctor whenever she hears his voice because they play a audio clip of the doctor saying something, and then she zaps it with some lasers.
And then he says that he's so enamored of this killing machine that if only she were real, I'd marry her. Okay, so this is our third instance of android racism. This is also something that I kind of went, well, why don't you?
It would make your plan so much easier.
Right?
Yeah, you wouldn't need to keep anybody alive.
He doesn't always think things through. And then that's when we have the scene, yeah, where I think Lamia takes Romana back to the prince's cell. And then she's like, hey, let me go. And then she's like, no, I got a crush. Once she leaves, Romana starts unlocking her. Like, she pulls like a pin out of her. Pin out of somewhere.
That's another reason why the scene with the rock. Not the wrestler, but the stone, the key to time, was so important because that's when we saw Romana lift a needle or something.
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice that.
That's where she grabbed her means of escape.
What I like about this scene is she's fiddling with it and she's like, how does the doctor do this?
Doesn't it later, though, that she says something like, now what would the doctor do? When she's outside, she says something about, now what would the doctor do? And I was kind of like, you're smarter than that.
I wouldn't stress too much about it. Do what you would do. Yeah.
Literally just like a day ago or whatever, saw him lose at chess to K-9.
I do like the idea, though, that their relationship is that, or their dynamic is that Romana is very sort of book smart and knows a lot. But when it comes to like adventure, she's like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah, it's like she's got the technical down, but like the practical, like actually doing it in the real world.
But also it does, like, the fact that she doesn't know that doesn't faze her. She's just like, I'm smart, I'll figure it out.
She does.
And she does.
She's pretty much done everything by herself so far in this serial without the doctor's help. But she unlocks herself, and then she goes to unlock the prince, but he's like, hey, I'm too sick to get out of here. Just you get out of here. It'll be fine. Leave me behind. And then they concoct a plan to smash the guard in the face so she can run and get out. And that happens. So yeah, then the doctor and K-9 go to that gazebo early to check the place out. Grindel and Lamia show up with Romana. All the pieces are getting put into place. Then Romana steals Grindel's horse. And is confused about how to get it to go. She's just like sitting on top of it, like,
Start,
move, do the thing. It's like that scene in the first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire where he doesn't know how to shoot the webs. Shazam!
And you guys know about Mary Tam and the horses, right?
Yeah, I read about it. She's really good at riding horses, but she refused to do it.
Why?
No helmet. She's like, this is too dangerous. What you do is you make a helmet that looks like hair. Problem solved. But she rides off on the horse. Lamia comes into the gazebo, talks to the doctor. He's like, well, show me Romana. And they send in Robomana. They were not expecting K-9 to be there. And K-9's like, hey, doctor, don't trust that. And he's like, he bends down to K-9 and goes, what'd you say? And then Robomana shoots at the doctor, having heard his voice. K-9 shoots Robomana, and she dies very dramatically.
Very dramatically.
Just jerking What's back that? And forth.
Oh, like that. Thanks.
Oh, I gave myself a headache. I don't know why. I was like physically doing the shaking motion. This is an audio format.
This is a podcast.
Yeah.
That was a Patreon exclusive.
Then things are getting out of hand. Like the guards are shooting at the gazebo. Lamia runs out and gets shot by the guards.
And all this is at Grendel's orders. He basically tells everybody to start firing on the gazebo, knowing that Lamia's in there. Now, we do find out he is kind of partial to her. Not all in, of course, but how does he phrase it? He once showed her a certain courtesy.
That's a very creepy way to put it.
And then he basically says, yeah, but that's the trouble with, you know, peasants, that they don't know their place. So
he does seem like, oh no, she got shot, even though, like, you
but
did
yeah,
it,
then
idiot.
She gets shot, and he seems very, not just because she's the only one that can build his machines, but he actually seems legit, like sorry to see her go.
Well, maybe he shouldn't have made that order.
Exactly.
I do, like,
doesn't think things through.
I think he says, yeah, fire at anything that comes out.
He yells out at the doctor, like, come out, I will not harm you. And then he turns to the guards and is like, shoot him if he pops out. See the white of his eyes, shoot. And then the doctor is like, all right, I'll head out. K-9's like, don't do it. He's like, shh, I got this. And then the second he pops out, everybody starts shooting at him.
The doctor pops his head out and goes, liar.
It's good comedy. So instead, K-9 burns a hole in the back of the gazebo, and the effect mostly lines up.
It gets a little ahead of itself once or twice.
It's another scene, though, where Tom is very close to a fire effect.
Just a little too close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of effects, we kind of bypassed it and I forgot to mention it. The scene where Grindel shows Romana, Robomana, that is also a really good split screen effect until the very end where Grindel, like, raises his hand toward Robomana and his arm entirely disappears. But it only happens for, like, a split second and then they cut to the next shot. But they burn a hole in the back of the gazebo. They get out. They're chased and shot at a bit, but are saved by Romana on horseback. And Grindel is very comedically unhappy about this. Slaps his face and is like,
sort of thing. I am surrounded by fools.
And really, he's the fool.
Yeah, well, he's not that much higher than them, that's for sure.
So they return to the prince's hideout place. I don't know what that place is specifically called.
I call it the prince's cabin. I just made that up. I didn't call it anything before now.
I like it. It's good.
Yeah, it seems like a nice hideaway. Although, everybody knows where it is. I mean, Grendel comes there all the time.
It's not a very good secret place. Romana tells everybody, you know, what's up. The whole situation that she's learned while being imprisoned. And Grindel arrives under a flag of truce. A little tiny white flag.
A white flag attached to a spear.
Well, that's how you know it's legit. See, I've dulled the blade by putting a flag on it.
I mean no harm. Look, there's a flag on my spear.
Then he asks the prince, in quotation marks, how he is doing. And George goes, I am well. He's so good at it. But Grindel takes the doctor aside and is basically like, look, I know that's not the real king. I've got the real king. But what if we don't have either of them as kings and we make you the king instead?
Tom's acting in this scene cracks me up because he's just like, what? Me? The king?
Yeah, this is very much like every once in a while Tom channels like the Marx Brothers. This is Marx Brothers stuff.
So good. It's so funny. He's like, oh, that's... Oh, what a great idea. Hold on. Let me go tell the other guys. And he runs in and they're like, hey, he just said this thing. They're like, that's treason. And then he throws the spear at the android, which conveniently turns into a very fake looking android. And he jumps out of the room and runs off with Romana, kidnaps Romana. And that is the end of episode 3. We are now into episode 4, which I have called 2 Weddings and a Funeral, or 3.
Well, it could also be called 3 Romanas and a Funeral.
4 Romanas.
4, yes.
4 Romanas and a Funeral. Isn't there a type of cheese called 4 Romanas?
No.
Thanks for that well-worded rebuttal.
There's not.
Thank you. So, Romana is returned to the prince's cell, which, like, her whole escape thing was for naught. I mean, she saved the doctor, I guess.
The prince is a little bit like, thought you escaped. Romana's like, yeah, didn't take.
Went, went.
And Grindel is going to make them marry each other, then kill the prince, then marry Romana, and then kill her.
Just marry the princess. That's all you have to do. It's that simple.
His plans keep getting more and more complicated.
And it seems like he's going out of his way to fool a guy who is really easily fooled.
Yeah, because, like, the next scene is him basically preparing this whole thing, and he's almost straight up saying what he's doing with minor tweaks.
He is. He literally tells him, okay, here's what's going to happen. These two crazy kids are going to get married in my house. One's not feeling well. He's going to die right afterwards, I'm afraid. And then I'm going to marry his new wife. And then she's going to die and we're going to have a funeral. And the guy's like, oh, that's kind of sad.
Okay. Doesn't sound suspicious at all.
No, that seems perfectly reasonable with the things that go around here.
all of his plans seem like something I would see in a soap opera over the span of months, but in 4 episodes.
He knows that the prince, or the king now, is dying, and yet, just a scene later, he's like, well, where is the happy couple? Like, are they really happy?
And then, I think he goes and talks to Princess Estrella, and like, I think he's like trying to see if she will be part of this marriage nonsense, and she firmly establishes, I ain't marrying anyone. I'm not going to help you with your evil plans. So then he goes into back to the prince and Romana and is like, I'm going to kill Strella blah, 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 if you two don't go through with the marriage. And this upsets the prince. And he's like, oh, well, maybe we will have to go through with it because I don't want to kill Strella.
Because certainly you're going to live up to your end of the bargain and leave her alive.
Because Grindel's a very trustworthy man.
The kind of person who kills somebody under a false truce or anything like that.
Not at all. This guy is as trustworthy as they come.
Yeah, so I don't see how this could go bad.
Not at all.
Let's get married.
And that's why brash young David's like, I admire that guy. Like, it took balls to come on in here and attack our android and run away.
Yeah, that's what it took.
And that's to your point why he seems kind of like he's going to do a heel turn at some point in this story, but he never does.
Yeah, and I thought that coupled with the fact that he was the one who brought in the poison goblets.
But he did get poisoned himself.
Yeah, but that could have been fake. I do think that if you like look really closely, it seems like the doctor gives someone else his cup as if maybe he's kind of expecting there might be some shenanigans. But all the cups have been poisoned, so it didn't even matter.
The other thing I noticed about this planet is that wine blows. Like, do not go to Terra to have a great vintage of vino. Because even in the beginning, before they find out that it's legit poison, the prince says to the doctor, well, have some of this. It's okay. It's kind of local. It's made by androids. But don't let that disturb you. And then we get a scene just now, I think, where Grendel throws this wine out because he says it's vinegar. You're looking for good vino? You're a wine enthusiast? Don't go to Terra.
And the fishing is terrible as well. Doctor didn't catch a thing. It's just not a good vacation destination.
No.
This is the next thing Farrah does sort of lean away from the fact that maybe Farrah's bad. They've gotten to the castle, and he offers the doctor his sword, but the doctor turns it down.
He says it's too complicated.
And so the doctor and K-9 sneak in through, like, I guess the moat, in a boat. I did not mean to rhyme.
Poor K-9 on this poor boat.
By the way, it's very ironic that in this scene, the doctor, like, refuses a sword. And you're like, oh, he's noble. He doesn't need a weapon. And then he spends about the next third of this episode having a sword fight.
It's so ungodly long. Not only is it so ungodly long, there's no score under it, which just makes it feel longer.
Yeah. Plus, it's shot in these, like, once they leave the throne room, it's shot in these dark hallways and you can't tell who's who.
And there's a lot of close-ups. So you can't even really see the swordplay that well.
And I have to give it credit, though, because we know it's Tom doing it. Apparently, he's not afraid of fire nor swordplay. But Jeffrey, the actor who's playing Grendel, must have been, because he's not. He's obviously not in that outfit.
Right, he's wearing his little helmet thing, his knight's helmet. Before all that, when they're sneaking in under the moat, the K-9 cuts another hole in the wall. And the doctor tells K-9 to stay in the boat because stairs.
He's like, there's bound to be stairs. We know you can't do that. Okay, bye.
You're like a Dalek in that way.
He's also like, also don't fall in the water. And K-9's like, no shit.
K-9's like, I've been in a boat before. And you're like, oh, have you, K-9? I think actually what he says is, I'm familiar with boats. But in the most like condescending way he can muster.
And then the doctor's like, well, just be careful. And then walks off screen and you hear a lot of crashing, which is my favorite joke. I know I haven't gotten here yet, but isn't there a scene later in Doctor Who where K-9 just goes right into the water and then like fries? I've seen that gif on Tumblr before.
Yeah, it's not obviously not this story. I can't recall where that would be.
Well, clearly he doesn't know very much about water. Maybe it's like he did in the previous serial, he accidentally deleted all of the information about water.
About water.
Like he did tennis.
I'm still convinced that's going to come up at some point. That K-9's going to need the knowledge of tennis to save the world. And he's not going to have it, and nobody's going to know why.
Match, set, point, K-9.
So the doctor sneaks in, he goes to the lab and takes something, and I wasn't sure what he took. But we'll find out later.
Thanks for that dramatic sting.
You're welcome. Then the doctor stops the wedding, and he goes up to the priest. He's like, have you done that bit where it's like, if there's any reason the two should not be married? Because that's my favorite bit to pop in at.
I really wanted to come in on that bit. Did you do it already?
And then that's when the sword fight starts happening. The doctor does very well.
Just to go back just a second, because they do introduce Strella here. And the Archbishop guy announces her as Strella, Princess of the Royal House of Terra. I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, I don't know how the whole, like, system works here.
I don't think we're supposed to. So.
It doesn't seem great if you can just be like, you were late. We got a new king now.
Yeah, that was a big point. It's like, well, if he's not here on time, then I guess we'll have to give someone else the kingdom.
Could you imagine if that's the way politics work now? Like, if, like, someone got elected and they're like,
it's just whoever gets to the traffic. White House first gets to be president.
You know, it's just as good as the system we have now, really. I mean, I don't see how it could get much worse. So, who knows? Who are we to judge? We just have better wine here.
Which is important.
Maybe that's what we should do. In future elections, it should be a literal race.
Yeah, like the Cannonball Run.
Ah, that'd be sweet. And then Jackie Chan wins the election. I don't remember if Jackie Chan won Cannonball Run.
I've never seen Cannonball Run.
Oh, you should. It's good. There's two of them.
Three.
They're both good. There's three? I gotta catch up.
The third one is actually not called. It was renamed to Speed Zone before it was released, but there's a third one.
Is it the same cast and everything? Or
not the same cast, but it's the same premise. They even call it the Cannonball Run. The only actor that's in all three is Jamie Farr. Of course, you can't do it without Jamie.
And then there was, of course, there was a reality show, game show called Cannonball Run 2001.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I watched it. I enjoyed it. There was different teams, and they were, like, from different reality shows. Like, there was two of them from Survivor, and those were the ones I was rooting for. But anyway, weird sidetrack about Cannonball Run aside, lots of sword fighting.
So much sword fighting.
Yeah, like you said, it was weird that there was no score for a very long time.
The thing about, like, fight scenes is without a score, all fight scenes seem like slap fights. Like, you're really able to see how immature the whole thing feels. When it's just like, tink, 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 scuffle, scuffle, scuffle. And you're like, yeah, this probably isn't the way people should go about solving problems.
Romana tells the doctor that Grendel is the best swordsman in Terra. She knows this because Grendel tells her this right when he meets her in the first episode. Like, the doctor said, his response is like, is he? Like, it's almost like, well, that's not saying a lot, maybe. Because how good are swordsmen here on Terra?
Maybe they all kind of suck.
Also, Grendel's the one who said it, so...
But we've got two other swordsmasters, right? Because we see on the good side... the two guys, they call themselves swordsmasters, and the David individual, I mean, we've seen the doctor disarm him and how good he is with a sword, so...
He literally just grabs the sword out of his hand at one point.
Well, now, I don't think brash young David is a sword master.
No, he says he is.
I thought the one guy was a sword master, Zendak? And he was, like, a sword master apprentice. He was, maybe. Like, he wasn't quite there yet. He's too brash and young, and... To David.
The thing also about this fight, I think it's actually pretty cool, but I agree, it does need a little bit. But there are two instances where Grendel loses, but the doctor allows him to continue.
I'm going to be honest, that just drove me crazy. Because I was like, it was over! What are you giving his sword back to him? We're done!
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all.
I mean, like, once it's like, yeah, that's sportsmanly. But, like, the second time, like, it's a mercy rule now. Like, He's just lost.
I will say this. This is... I didn't mind the sword fight too much. It was all right. It was whatever. But it definitely pales in comparison to the Sea Devil's sword fight. That one was beautiful. Because, like, that one had the doctor eating a sandwich halfway through.
We do have... It is established that the doctor can handle himself with a sword. This is not news.
Like, the first time the doctor gives Grendel back his sword, I expected Grendel to go, "But you see, I'm not left-handed!" But that didn't happen.
Nice Princess Ride reference.
So, but during this whole sword fight, Romana sneaks away.
She sees Grendel's guy, like, going, this doesn't look good. I better go kill somebody.
She really just does it in the background of a shot, and for some reason it amuses me greatly.
You're just like, oh, I'm bored of this sword fight.
I think it is that she's so casual about it. She's not like, oh, I should go follow that guy. She just kind of saunters out of the scene like, eh, I'm done with this.
And the prince takes out Till and raises the gates, letting in his people, his army, I suppose. Grendel's guy, who is so unimportant to this serial that he's not even mentioned in the recap on Wikipedia, on the wiki. His name is Kirster, though. Took me a while to figure that out. He goes to kill Princess Strella. Romana sneaks up behind him and smashes that tapestry thing that she was working on over his head. Which, I mean, fair, but also, she worked hard on that.
I do like, though, that after this, and it's a little ways up, but there's a scene where the princess and Romana are just kind of chilling.
Yeah.
And she's, like, teaching her how to weave tapestries, and Romana's like, that is really impressive. She's like, it must take, like, a really long time to
learn.
She's
not only teaching her, she's like, you fix this.
Well, after she smashes the painting over the guy's head, the real princess smashes a vase over his head, too, so they teamed up. But when they're in that scene where she's teaching her or whatever, he's just, like, crashed in the background. The whole shot. It's great.
But I like that Romana has kind of, like, a respect for this art that she, you know, didn't know anything about. She's like, it must take you, like, a really long time to learn how to do that. And the princess is like, it just takes some patience. I don't know.
I've kind of been in a dungeon for a little while. So.
I enjoyed that scene between the two of them greatly.
And it's both the same actress.
Yeah.
They had certain chemistry, is that what you're saying?
Somehow.
Do you ship Romana and Strella?
Yeah.
Romana Strella?
I mean, you should. I hadn't considered it until this moment, but now that you've said it, I don't have any objections.
Now let me Google that fiction out there.
Oh, I guarantee you there's something.
Before Romana's appear in a story, there's something.
So the doctor and Grendel fight their way to the roof or outside, and the doctor's like, do you hear that? That means you lost, because you hear all the fighting going on and stuff. And Grendel's like, I will never lose. I won't give up. And then he
says, I'm a Gracht. We never surrender. But we do jump into moats.
The bad guy gets away in this one, kind of. Were they expecting to do a sequel?
To do a sequel?
I don't know, but I love Grendel the fact back. That right before he jumps, he says, next time I shall not be so lenient.
The doctor's like, yeah, I'm never coming back here.
I have learned my lesson. Just kill you all and replace you all with androids. That's the sequel to this. The Android Uprising of Terra.
He's just replaced literally everyone with robots. But yeah, then everything's pretty much wrapped up. But wait, where's Romana? And then that scene happens. The doctor, like, rushes in, like, to save her. But they're just hanging. And then the prince and the princess are reunited. And I guess they were in love or something, because they have a smooch.
The doctor can't tell the difference immediately. So it's a good thing he wasn't going to whack someone in the head in this scene.
That's true. He looks at the princess and starts talking to her as if she's Romana. And Romana's like, over here.
So the doctor and Romana go to look for the piece and they can't find it. And then the doctor's like, oh, wait a second, and pulls it out of his pocket. That's what he got in the lab earlier. He's like, you should be more careful where you leave these things. And then, like, Romana says something that blows my mind a little bit. They're about to leave, and she's like, I'm a little sad to see, you know, a little sad to go. And I'm like, why? You spent 90% of your time locked in a dungeon.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that, too. She's like, I'm quite sorry to leave, Dara. And I'm like, what?
That seems like something the writer said and not you. And the doctor's like, I'm not sad to leave. I didn't catch a single fish. And they're like, all right, let's go. Hey, wait a second. What did we do with Canine?
Poor Canine's just on this boat. They left Canine on the boat and forgot about him. And the last shot is just the boat, like, spinning in the water.
With Canine going, master, master.
And the doctor just laughing.
Just laughing straight in his poor robot dog face. It's so mean.
I loved it. But that's it. That is the end of The Androids of Terra. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for final thoughts.
Hey, this is Mike. A few months back, I was given the assignment of creating a new promo for the Air Station 1 podcast. I figured I had a ton of time, but I kind of got distracted. Go figure. And we realized we had somehow missed our deadline. So here I am late at night trying to figure out something creative to get you to listen to our show. I guess I could just use my announcer voice. Listen to the Earth Station 1 podcast. For almost 9 years, we've been bringing your inner geek out to play. We are a founding member of the ESO Network, and you can find us up on most media players like iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. I think that might work.
And we are back. Tony, are you aware of what time it is?
Is it time to do plugs?
No, we do something before we do plugs.
Oh, you want to talk about the episode. Okay, so here...
We talked.
The episode opens.
We already did that bit.
We did.
Yeah, what's between that bit and plugs?
To be honest,
yeah,
mostly me zoning out.
At least you're honest.
I think it's time for final thoughts.
It is. It's time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts. I like this story. I do. I think it's a high point in the Key to Time, and maybe that's because the Key to Time really doesn't have much to do with the story whatsoever. They, as you point out, they find the key. Romana finds the key pretty quickly, and it's just a send up of, or a mashup, if you will, of Prisoner of Zenda adventure stories of that kind, with some pretty fun acting and some android nonsense, and yeah, we get Princess Strella. First Lady of Terra, descendant of the royal house, mistress of the domains of Thorwald, Mortgard, and Freya. And it sounds like she's got enough to do on her plate that she could use a couple of assistants with maybe some more Mary Tam looking androids.
That's the spinoff.
This is the spinoff.
And it's about them starting up their fashion industry. It's like, it's about them starting up, like...
Now we just need a pithy name.
Crimes of Fashion. I don't know.
Yikes.
Then the sequel will be called The Androids of Strella.
I like that.
And it'll be a robot uprising of an army of Mary Tams.
See, I was kind of imagining like a Project Runway thing, except it's on Terra.
That would never work. You could never have a Project Runway fashion event in a place with such bad wine. So they would really need to step up their wine game if they wanted to really get into international, interdimensional, universal fashion. But Mary Tam is great in this. I mean, she holds her own with four roles. The doctor, Tom, is just on fire in this one. And Canine kicks ass. And the villains. Like I said, I like Karen Grindel's performance. And I wish we'd seen a couple of the other guys fleshed out a little bit more on his team. But Lamia's kind of interesting as a character, and I like it overall.
I don't have much to say just because it was an episode where it's like, yeah, that was a good one. I enjoyed it. Also, I'm not feeling great, and my throat is killing me, and I'm out of water. Well, where are my thoughts on this episode? I just have flu brain. It's just really fun, and it's, you know, medieval space nonsense. Always a good time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's all I got. I'm sorry. I'm going to go lay down now.
We're almost done. We're almost done. We'll be there. Yeah, I agree. It's pretty solid. I don't know if it's my favorite in the Key to Time so far, but it's been a great season.
Yeah, I've been enjoying Key to Time, for sure.
The only downsides I think in this serial are... One, I kind of would have liked more of the baby Bigfoot thing.
Oh yeah, when you mentioned that, because Joe always goes through his notes afterwards and sort of streamlines them, and Joe's like, Oh yeah, there was a Bigfoot at the beginning of the serial, and I was like, oh shit, there was!
So I would like maybe a little bit more exploration of, like, more, like, I don't know, creatures on the property or something.
Or just not have it.
Yeah. Either or. As I do think Mary Tam was great, and I love that she played four characters, I kind of would have liked a little more of that.
To see, like more of the princess and stuff?
Yeah, maybe more of the princess, more of, like, more interaction between Romana and Strella. I would have liked a little bit more of that. But as it is, yeah, just more scenes of them just hanging out, making art. That's what I want. But yeah, I think she did a great job. I think Tom Baker seemed to be having fun, which is always good. The villain was great. I love Lamia's curly cues. Yeah, I thought this was a solid, fun time. I am, like I said, I am enjoying this season tremendously.
Well, I am glad to hear it. Yeah, unfortunately, the next one, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I've heard the next two probably are not the best. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the key to time is kind of peaked here. So yes, yeah, so just lower your expectations going into the next couple, and you should be fine.
I'm kind of waiting for, like, the Dark Guardian to show up, since...
Black Guardian,
yeah, yeah. We've been talking about it.
Yeah, I assume he shows up in the last one.
In the last one.
That's my theory. I bet we don't see the White Guardian again.
Man, the set that he lived on...
was beautiful.
Was amazing.
In his little wicker chair.
It's one of those things where it's like, you can tell somebody really just set out to make something bizarre.
I think that's when Doctor Who's at its best, is when it's aiming for weird. But before we go, is there anything you would like to plug?
Well, I appreciate the invite. I always like hanging with you guys, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah, people can find me on, of course, the Mothership, Earth Station 1, the weekly podcast that we do. I also am a co-host on Earth Station Who, which is released every other week now that we are not into new Doctor Who weekly series, episodes. So, and then as far as my own work, yeah, if you go to newlegendmike.com or tikizombie.net, you'll find out all about the upcoming Kickstarter for the new book.
And as for us, still keep an eye out for the
Watch Unseen World. Please. Watch it.
It's
the only thing that gives my life meaning. That's not true. But please watch it, though.
What about me? Do I give you
life? I just said it wasn't true. Okay. Slightly hyperbolic.
You can watch it on the Heartland Network. If you don't have the Heartland Network, it's on watchheartlandtv.com. They air it live. And it's also available on demand on the Roku app. For the Heartland Network Roku app. So you have no reason not to watch it. None. And this weekend, May 3rd through the 5th, in Atlanta, we are going to be at the Wholanta Convention. We've got a lot going on that weekend. Primarily, we're going to be recording a podcast on Saturday at 10 p.m. About the new MacroTerror animation. We hope to have a bunch of guests there with us. R. Alan Seiler, Matt Golden, Nicole Mazza, Mike Gordon of this episode, and possibly Ashley Rayburn if it doesn't cut into his Paul is Dead panel. But we'll be doing stuff all weekend. Friday at 9 p.m. I will be reading from the new book I co-wrote, Road Trippy. At 10 p.m. on Friday, I'll be part of a Buffy panel. At 11 p.m., we'll be watching the MacroTerror, the new animation. And then on Saturday, we'll be on the Retro Television panel at 10 a.m. talking about The Unseen World. We'll be showing episodes of The Unseen World at 4 p.m. on Saturday. I'll be on the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy panel at 8 p.m. And we'll be recording the podcast at 10 p.m. That's what all we're doing. Let me sum that up again real quick. Friday at 9, I'll be reading Road Trippy. At 10, I'll be on the Buffy panel, and at 11 p.m. we'll be watching the MacroTerror. On Saturday at 10 a.m. we'll be doing the Retro TV panel. At 4 p.m. we'll be showing episodes of The Unseen World. At 8 p.m. I'll be on the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy panel, and at 10 p.m. we'll be recording the podcast. So I hope we will see you guys there. I think that's it. If you liked this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com. And be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It does iTunes magic things.
The more comments we get, the more other people, the easier it is for them to find us. And we like other people finding us and listening to us and sharing us with their friends. Because that's why we do this whole thing.
And if you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to watchyourassline.com/support, and there you can find a link to our Patreon page, which you can also just get to by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, bonus episodes, live streams of us watching the episodes, and just recently... we have, for every patron, a Discord server where you can just come hang out and chat with us about whatever you want to chat about or whatever we want to chat about.
Which means I'm making a Farscape room and trying to get everyone to watch Farscape. Please watch Farscape! It's a really good show!
If we ever do a podcast on Farscape, that's going
to
be fun.
We should do it. I will be on.
I try to turn this into a podcast about Farscape almost every episode.
The Watchathon of Zahn? Is that what we taught? Also, in the Discord is a section that's just called Cute Animals. So, there's something for everyone. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Bisexual Brigadier for sponsoring this episode and this entire season, really.
Thanks, Bisexual Brigadier.
You can follow her on Tumblr at bisexualbrigadier.tumblr.com. And we also want to give a special shout out to Vincent EL for making our theme song.
Thanks, Vince.
You can check out their stuff at swinglish.nu. And tune in next time when we talk about the power of Nick Kroll. We have no guests on that one. It's just us. Suffering through.
We didn't want to inflict it on anyone else.
You're too kind.
But keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you.
As always, it's my pleasure.
But there are so many different kinds of stitch. It must take years to learn the art. It's really only a question of patience and a certain delicacy of touch. I'm sure you can manage it. Go on.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.